Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I've hit the button. I've hit the button. Jules Keel, I've hit the button.
That voice is very offensive to my people of Somerset. I feel like you've really...
I'm doing it with love, Jules.
I know you are, mate. Oh, you know, you haven't scrumped my apples, I'll tell you that much. But I tell you, if you want to go real Somerset, you go, and if you said yes to that, you'd have owed me 3 sheep and 2 cattle.
Brilliant, and 3 turnips. That's the everybody and their mums is packing around here, just trying to translate the language. But yes, welcome to the Untitled Banter podcast, or also the UBP.
UBP.
I did want to shout out. I should also mention I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill. Hello, Jules.
Hello.
I did want to shout out that I was looking at the distribution of our listenership around the world, and I just want to shout out a few different countries because this is pretty insane. We're reaching.
People beyond Newcastle listen to us.
This is what blew my mind. So shout out to the Gown Gang worldwide. Hopefully everyone else has got
Gown Gang.
Gown Gang worldwide, because we have listeners in Canada, the US, obviously the UK as well. But then massive shout outs to Sweden, Germany, France, South Africa, Australia, Argentina, Chile, Brazil, South Korea, and Japan, and many others. Also, there was like a bunch of people in Myanmar just sort of taking some time off.
What? Just listening.
So I hope you've all got your gowns on. And thank you very much for, you know, I don't know, keeping up with this particular thread of banter.
They've got their gowns on, they've got their Marmite and chili sandwiches on the side, and they've got the amazing UBP, UBD, Untitled Banter Drink cocktail. What a combination. You would feel sick if you drank and ate all of that together. I can't recommend it.
I'd have to assume. I like the idea that we're reaching, I don't know, like around the world in so many different ways. But yeah, we've also got... It is nuts. So every week we also collate all your questions and stuff, but I thought we'd do something a little bit different for this week. And I mentioned this last Friday because we get tons of questions submitted, thankfully, which is brilliant. But a lot of them end up in the take trough and sort of get passed on week to week, and I highlight different ones. But I thought for just one week, why not go back to the overflow as it is? Because there's lots of great stuff in here, and I want to sort of pick from that. So we didn't do a question tweet this week because I thought there was a lot of awesome stuff to pick from. Mm-hmm. Before we do questions, though, I want to ask you, Mr. Jules, what did you think of the Mortal Kombat trailer, if you've seen it?
Right, okay. There is so much banter going on in that trailer. I love it. It's at once looks like it's the most high-end that a video game has been for quite a while in terms of production values, but also there's some bits in it that are so corny and over the top that I'm just like, oh, they get this. They might actually understand the source material of Mortal Kombat. It's not one that takes itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit like, I was amazed when I saw Sub-Zero freeze Scorpion's blood into a dagger and then stab him. I was like, that's a sick thing that I can genuinely say that I've not seen outside of the game in any other movie. So fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then to counterbalance that, you had the fight between Kano and Reptile in the sort of lab, and it just like we freeze framed it, and it just looked like it was like the cheesiest B movie shot
so
ever.
You
basically
it,
got like an Australian punching a guy in like a bodysuit. It looked like it was the first monster that Captain Kirk fights. That should have been the music for it.
I wonder if that's like a callback to like Puppet Goro from 1995, because I just rewatched the 1995 one last night.
Was he Claymotion?
No, he was like a, it was a whole thing about how they got him to, it's like a costume that, like, I think that some dude was playing his legs. And then there was a bunch of other, like, strings and poles moving his arms.
So, sorry, I'm losing it on your, oh yeah, you can find my IMDb page. I played Goro's legs.
Left leg and right leg, just sort of bring it to go. But yeah, I mean, they cut every 2 seconds around him, which I noticed rewatching it, because obviously they can only set up a shot for like one punch from Goro and then cut, and now he moves and then cut. Because Goro in the new one is like all CG, and he looks brilliant. I think I think it looks phenomenal. Like, oh my god, me and Josh did the reaction thing last night. I've just filmed a details you missed thing, and I just, like you said, the blood dagger was badass, all the costumes look incredible. Is this the turning point? Like, we sort of said Sonic the Hedgehog and Detective Pikachu. Is this it, Jules? Is this
don't get your hopes up, because I feel like
they're all the way up, mate.
This is the problem. We all know deep down that this is not going to be the movie that changes the fate of video game adaptations. It's just not going to be. Like,
it might be.
Even if they lean really heavily into the lore, then they're going to alienate a load of people who just want the blood and violence. And if they go just into the blood and violence, they're going to basically just come across as a shallow film. I do not looking at this from the outset, I can safely say, hand on heart, that this will probably, at least hopefully, be better than that god-awful Dragon Ball Z movie that we got.
Yes. Well, that's it. Yeah, there's certain things that it has to be better than. Like, better than Dragon Ball, better than Avatar.
Maybe the Dead or Alive one?
Better than the Dead or Alive movie. And I mean, I loved Dead or Alive back on the PS2 enough that I could get through that movie. But I think this one, MK, seems like it has a lot of promise. And they do, like I said, the costumes are spot on. Mm-hmm. All the little references to, like, oh, that's Outworld. And that in the background, oh, it seems like Cole Young is like that weird plaque thing in the middle. It's a whole thing. I felt
really sorry for Jack's arms.
What?
Like, when
he has better arms.
But you saw him getting frozen off and off. That is, oh, ow.
I just love the fact that they opened on that. Like, I mean, Jax has lost his arms like three different ways. And then it was like, how are they going to get lost this time? Oh, Sub-Zero steals his arms. And I'm pretty game for that. But yeah, I wanted to just check in with Mortal Kombat because that is the big talking point this week. First question from Danny Edwards. Okay. If you were a Dark Souls boss, what kind of theme would you have and what would be your weakness?
That is a brilliant question.
Because I think I'd be like a monologuer, where you can't get to me because I've got shields. I've got some sort of radial thing that you need to get to me and expose the truth.
What if it's like, you know, the Crash Bandicoot 3 battle against Dingo Dial? Yeah. Right? Bear with me. Imagine that. You know, he brings the glaciers down and you have to like fight your way through that.
You've
got barriers, but they're made of words, or they're like giant... like scriptures written on what are they called? You know, like the Ten Commandments on
big
stone tablets?
Oh, yeah, like a big,
tablets
big tablet.
Drop down and they've got your takes on them and they slam into you. Like,
it just says GTA 5 wasn't all that. What? And then there's like 10 more just keep coming down.
And it's just like battering you with these, like, it's like, oh, God, No Man's Sky was always good.
It totally was. Oh, that's the thing. You think I'm done and then that's my like second form. That's my trap card saying No Man's Sky was never good.
It gets to your second phase, right? And all of the crumbled like remains of the tablets that the players had to smash through, right? They build this massive mountain and it becomes the hill that you died on.
I'd go out in style. I think for yours, my mind just goes to the giant egg from Link's Awakening, but I don't know if that's
the
direction you want to go to be a giant invincible egg.
Because I've got like such a big mouth and I don't stop talking, I reckon that I'd have something to do with like a massive mouth that bites you, or like fires like chittering sort of like things, like
one of like those little clapper teeth things. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, I mean, maybe I would be I know what I'd be.
Go on.
I'd be a frail, weak old egg, right? You know, like the last monk who's on his chair and he's got like the big turban.
Right.
And the turban then becomes like the boss like that you fight in demons.
It's got a fist on the end of it. Yeah.
Well, I would be like that, but a giant dragon would come down and be like, that's my egg, and he'd have a northern voice and he'd be like, oh, get off my boy.
He's got takes to give. He's got content to make. You can't have my boy. He's got.
Yeah, you can't have that. You can't have my boy.
I like the idea of Dark Souls themed stuff. I feel like Dark Souls has run its course, but if they got more inventive with the bosses of this era, then maybe.
It's a tough one because I was watching a fantastic breakdown video in defense of Dark Souls 2, because this is the thing. I don't know if you're the same as me. If I find that I hate a game, if I dislike something, I'll go and find people who really like it and watch and see if I can understand their
opinion. Yeah, like, well, yeah, what did you get out of this?
Because I don't like carrying around that sort of negative energy towards a game, just being like, you know, there are some games out there that are trash. We all universally agree that they're trash, but there are some that like really divide people, and I want to understand what they got out of it that I clearly didn't. And one of my biggest complaints was is that Dark Souls 2 had way too much of a reliance over enemies and big dudes in armor. And critique, I think it was H Bomber Guy, I think that was who it was. He said that those battles that you have, the best battles that you have in Dark Souls boss battles, are one-on-one duels, and they tend to be against humanoid enemies wearing armor. And then I was like, oh, actually, he's totally right. Like Dark Souls 2 plays on that strength. It's just a shame it doesn't give us much difference in between them.
It's weird because like I feel like that's what they embraced with Sekiro. Just like kind of like, we're going to give you this perfect parry mechanic, and then you can have these really, really lightning fast one-to-one duels. Which like, yeah, I kind of think that too. It's weird. I always get the most anxious when I'm fighting a one-on-one, human creature, because I'm like, they can match my movements one-to-one. I can't turtle around them. I can't dodge these bigger swings and stuff. But yeah, I would totally back that. Next question from Rize/Arcade Mike. What is our go-to comfort food meal and or recipe?
Ooh.
A rice pan meal would be my shout. I feel like it took me 30 plus years to realize that you can just buy pan meals and they're really good. I recommend.
When you say rice pan meals, elaborate on this, because at the moment you've just got your basmati rice in the pan. What goes on it?
Oh, it's like, well, you buy like a whole pack. I feel like we should be sponsored by El Paso, because I feel like I bring them up every now and then. But we totally these like, you know, you know what I mean? It's like a rice pan thing. It gives you the rice, it gives you the sauce, it gives you the cooking powder, and you just do the chicken, the little fricassee with the chicken, and then you just cover it in the stuff, and then you leave it for 10 minutes, and it's beautiful. It's done.
Yeah, that is, it's like it's a ready-made meal that you actually make ready.
It's the right ratio of like what I have to bring to the table, literally, versus how much is prepared for me, because I can't make the thing from scratch. I'm going to need you to prepare the powders, and then just I'll go from there.
See, I absolutely love cooking. I cook every single meal for me and Kerry, just because of the fact that I enjoy being in the kitchen quite a lot and just making stuff.
Real world crafting.
If I was like, one of my favorite meals, my go-to meal is always going to be like a hearty bowl of like five bean chili. I absolutely love chili. I just think that it's like so, it's making my mouth water just talking about it. But if I was going to go for like my meal that I make that I don't make that often, but I love more than anything, it's moussaka. Perfect stuff.
I would say for both of ours that we need, well, for me at least, I need a bread accompaniment. I need garlic bread. I need some sort of
you and Kerry the exact same. Where's my sides? Is the exact chance.
You're not one of those main
house.
Only people, are you? Oh, it's
no,
enough for
I'm
just
not,
the main.
No, I'm not a main only person, but I can definitely get away with having like less sides. Like I'm just like, oh yeah, you give me like this lasagna, I'll take a side salad or something with it.
Right.
And it's like chips, garlic bread, beans.
You said chips weirdly there. You pronounced it as side salad. It's definitely chips, pal. Lasagna and chips is the way. Next question from Nado King. Which video game boss / achievement broke you? Very big fan of this. I can throw one in actually, because I hadn't been playing the Neo games in a long time, and I got back into, well, I got Neo 2 because they did the 120 frames a second upgrade thing. And I was like, well, I need to put this over a grand TV to some use. So I'll get Neo 2 and put it on 120 FPS. I cannot be, and I've only done it last night five times, died every time. It's the second enemy. It's not even a boss, really. I think it's meant to be a mini boss, but like you fight like a little dude, and then you fight a big bull lad called like Gazuki or something, or Gokizu or something. And he just comes at you and he just kills you. And I can't beat him. And I can tell what they're doing. I can tell it's a Soulsborne, and they're all like, oh, you know, hey, lol, we'll give you an impossible thing straight away. But I can't. I mean, I just died and I was like, it's this feeling again. And I thought it would go a little bit longer before I got that feeling. No, first 10 seconds.
Never have I met a man who realizes what he does not like about a video game and yet plays so many video games that actually exemplify that very point.
I've got to steer into it. Well, to be fair, I love Dark Souls. Like Dark Souls 1 is one of my favorite games of all time. And I love 3 as well. That's like right up there. But the rest, I keep trying them, but it's just nothing gets up there. The Surge 2 got pretty close. But
I need to play The Surge 2. You've recommended this quite a lot, actually, and I would be up for giving it a go.
It's just because the devs, they're called like, I think it's Deck 13. I like their way of approaching the Souls formula where they think of it like mechanically. And it's like, because they had it with Lords of the Fallen, where if you don't use the bonfire checkpoint, then you get an XP doubler. And then it's like, if you can survive longer and go to the next one, then you bank even more. And like the more you kill, but obviously if you die, then you lose even more and you haven't even got a checkpoint. So I like that. And then in the Surge, they have a whole crafting system based around like which limb or like a head or an armor part you shear off one of the enemies. So that's if you're cool. trying to get like better leg armor, then you just target legs, because there's a whole targeting system. You just target legs and just go for the legs over and over again, get a bunch of leg crafting components and build a better thing. And I love that they have, it's great. Like honestly, having them be this sort of like, you know, they're cribbing a lot from the Souls formula, but they're like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if it had this? Wouldn't it be cool if this was the checkpoint system? And I feel like they don't get enough due, because it's just like, oh, it's just Dark Souls with a cyberpunk skin. And it's not like there's a lot of really cool, neat little mechanics in there. And the targeting thing is just badass. Plus there's fatalities in it. Like you can just, if you target a dude's head and he's weak, you just lop his head off, or you lop his arm off, or you do some cool little spin that ends with their limb flying past the camera in slow motion. So big fun.
That does sound really cool, actually. I think that my boss that broke me, or achievement that I was trying to get, there's two. One is trying to beat Sigrun from God of War. Oh, man.
Oh, God, the final one, yeah.
That took me so long to
do. I never actually beat that.
Do you know what? I don't blame you. And I don't blame anyone who walked away from that fight, because it's not a case of the boss being like bullcrap or like just unfair. It is incredibly fair, because what the Valkyries have been doing is that they've been teaching you one specific reaction to one or two specific moves in each and every fight. The problem is that Sigrun just has all of them and will not telegraph what she's about to do before she does it. And I'm like, this is the perfect encapsulation of what the game has been teaching you, but it is just so unrelenting.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have a perfect run. And I know that there are people out there that can like absolutely cheese this boss, and credit to them, but I wasn't able to get into that swing of doing it. It took me absolutely ages. Maybe like, I'd say 4 nights after work, getting home at say 6 p.m. until maybe 10 p.m.
Right.
And it's nearly an entire
over
week,
and over.
Like just dying over and just having to take a break and just being like, oh, I can't, and coming back to.
Yeah, my thing with Sigrun is, this is kind of one of my rules, well, not a rule, but like something that always gets to me in games, is like, if I'm being beaten and the boss animation, the enemy animation is like unrelentingly in my face, just get in the ground and like after a while, I'm like, oh God, I need to just get away from this for a bit, because Sigrun has that animation where she lands on you like foot first and just kicks you in the face over and over again.
Yeah.
And I'm just sort of like, I know I'm losing game, but I don't need you to just make me
to literally
taste.
Rub my face in it.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm just like, I don't know. It's one of those things. I just remember, it's because I'm playing a lot of Mortal Kombat at the minute, obviously. And it reminds me of people who play Jax online, because they use an ability where loads of his attack strings can end in a grapple that just pounds you into the ground. It's the same like four moves, four punches. Man. So it's always like ba 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 ba, and then ba 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 ba. It's just like over and over again. And after a while, I'm like, can I just breathe for a second? Can I just sort of, you know, flex in a direction that isn't like towards the ground? So like, that Sigrun thing completely just, oh God, I had to step away from it.
Yeah, eventually I got the better of her, though. Perseverance paid off in the end. But it was basically like the game telling you have to have a perfect run.
Yeah, so like, kind of, cool. I need to get back to that.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
The next question from Mark Poin. Any games you bought only for the price to drop almost immediately?
Oh, so many. Yeah. Literally. Like, we're lucky in the sense that because of the job that we have, we get sent a lot of games to review, mm-hmm. Or like preview them. So my cost of video games has gone down exponentially since starting What Culture. But before then, every single bloody game I bought seemed to go on sale the next week. And it was mainly because of the fact that I was like, I had no disposable income whatsoever for the first like 23 years of my life. But I was so invested into video games that I would work and save everything I had to buy the next release. And that's why the gut punch of saying, going in and like buying Final Fantasy VIII, mm-hmm. only because it taken me months to scrounge the money together to pay for it, only for then it to go into the platinum range on the PS1 like a week later. I was like, are you kidding me? This is now literally half price. Like,
The thing that with me is like, we get sent like a lot of the bigger games. Those are the ones that we choose to cover on the site. But for me, I've got to play everything. It's me.
I know
it's
you an do, illness. Man.
And so like, I love Wreckfest. I love Dirt 5. Both of them I enjoyed. I think I played Wreckfest over Christmas, Times of Fat Circle, mm-hmm. but it was recently. And then both of those games, Wreckfest and Dirt 5, are both on this month's Games for Gold Game Pass thing. Yeah. And so I was like, I just bought them. I just got Dirt 5 for like £50 or whatever it was, and now it's on the free thing. And I think, I don't know whether any like Xbox or PlayStation or maybe Nintendo, if they eventually do it, would flag which games are about to be added, because that would tank the sales of those games in the so like, I guess going forward it's always going to be, hey, I just got that and now it's free. That's just kind of the way that we're going to
I mean, it would be lovely if there was like a week or so period that if you had bought the game, say 3 to 4 days before it went into the sale, they would apply that back to you afterwards into credit, so that you on the store, so you'd still end up spending that amount of money, but it just wouldn't be overall on one game.
That would be fairer. That would also require them to be nice and not take the full
price. Not
going to
happen then, is it?
I just think that like, there's so many of us that have that issue, especially with Game Pass things rotating every like few months, and games with gold and whatever else. Next question from Andy. In a parallel universe where the disc expansion for the N64 has been successfully released, which next gen console would you now have at home, and which game would be your favorite game? So if you don't know, anyone at home or around the world, this is initially when Nintendo and Sony were one, and there was a Nintendo 64 expansion that was going to have a disc on it. And apparently they couldn't agree on how to split the revenue at retail. And so Sony said, oh, I'll do it myself then. And they just left and made the Sony PlayStation and left the cartridges to one side. And that was, they split. But initially, you can still find it. There's images and everything else of this N64.
There is one working prototype out there, isn't there?
Yeah. And one guy reckoned he found it. Benji never believed him, Benji who writes for us and who is with us, never believed him. He was like, it's too rare, it doesn't make sense. But apparently there is a working prototype, which has since been proven, if you believe it. But point being that they were once one. And I guess if there was a disc-based N64, then that would become the dominant console of the 90s. You wouldn't have a PlayStation. Ken Kutaragi would still be working at Nintendo. And so I don't know, like Ocarina of Time would, well, sorry, Zelda would be even bigger. I don't know what Nintendo franchise hasn't been capitalized on, really.
I'm so confused by what. So is the question asking us, like, in this alternate timeline,
yes,
what we'd be playing now if yes, that was successful?
Pretty much wipe out the PlayStation, wipe out the PS2.
Oh, and you've God, got so many all games. Those,
what, like, basically, what would Nintendo do with a disc-based system? And then in that timeline across the 2000s, I guess they would, the GameCube would be a hell of a lot bigger.
Yeah,
more of a game rectangle, and then like in I mean, I don't mean literally; it would be literally bigger, but it would be bigger in terms of how much it's sold, well, and all those franchises would be even bigger.
The problem is that Nintendo really only has the first party titles, yeah, like that's what everyone buys them for, and they've drilled down into them so much already. It's hard to, like, what would they add? Like a sixth title to their five games of Doom? Like
that would be a show. Actually, they would have more new IP because in the yeah, last sort of 20 years, they've only really birthed Splatoon, I guess Pikmin as well, but they're very rarely doing new IP.
There's actually a bit of a worry because if the one thing that people often forget about the Wii is that console had an absolutely abysmal content regulation program. Like,
right,
there were so many shovelware games.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Nintendo didn't care. They were just get as many games on this platform as possible. We do not care, brother. They can be absolute tosh, but just get them out the door. And that worries me because if they didn't have any direct competition and they just were like, yeah, cool, we'll develop any idea, then we might have ended up, if this alternate timeline is to be believed, mm-hmm, with a repeat of the Atari mistake where they didn't put any regulation on their Atari 2600.
They go power mad.
Yeah, and bomb the market. So Nintendo might have actually bombed. We might even not even be sitting here playing a console. We might be sitting here thinking, what the hell's a console?
We don't even need another generation because there's one system for everybody and that's it.
The only console that survived was the Virtua Boy. just, we're all sitting there just
that's
like,
your thing.
Help me.
That's totally your thing where it's the newest version of virtual reality is rooted through the Virtua Boy. So everything's in red. Because that took off.
Everyone's got like slight lacerations around their eyes where it's like a like sort of unholy pentagram has been scored into their face by the Virtua Boy's unholy visuals.
Oh God. So yeah, I think in an alternate universe, you wouldn't get the vast majority of your favorite titles outside Nintendo. And I don't know what they'd be doing to this day other than just reselling you another version of Mario 64. At least it would run faster or something. So not to worry.
Great question though. I like that sort of like out there thinking.
No, totally. The system itself is like looks brilliant as well. It was just like it's like a weird hybrid of stuff, especially looking back at it. Next question from White Morgan Freeman. Hell of a name, but you gotta just go with it. If you could free one developer from the umbrella of EA or Activision, which one would it be? They would say Respawn and let Titanfall get off the ground again.
I think that you and I are both in agreement as Criterion.
Oh,
like it's got to be the amount of times that we talk about how good Burnout is. Like, imagine having them free reign, getting to make Paradise 2. Like,
we differ on this because I'm Burnout 3, man. I'd even take Revenge over Burnout Paradise. But
Paradise was bloody good, though.
Paradise was solid, but I don't know. Every race is the same. Like, it's like you go over there and it's like race back over there, and then you go there
I can understand that.
I just want the race. I want the arcade menus. But he mentioned Activision as well. I would free up Raven because Raven did Marvel Ultimate Alliance. They did Singularity. They were just such a great, like, they did X2 Wolverine's Revenge, I think, back in the day. And they were just such a great, really good, reliable studio. And then they got snatched up by Activision and they've just been working in the Call of Duty mines for the last sort of 10 years.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm trying to think of anyone from Activision that I can't remember who's under their umbrella at the moment.
Well, see, I'll probably free up Bungie, but I don't know what I would get them to do because now they're, I guess they've gone independent, so they're not even owed to them anymore. But the EA stuff is more sort of all their claws are in on stuff because they just bought Codemasters as well. So F1 games and Dirt and Grid, they're all going to be under EA.
So what are Maxis doing at the moment?
Sims.
They can stay with them.
Sims is just a DLC first. It's been ages since there's been a numbered Sims game. But I think freeing studios from EA feels like a more worthwhile thing, even though Activision, what even is Activision doing at this point other than making the same two titles every year, year in, year out?
I'm just looking at them now. So it's like, obviously, if we free BioWare,
Yeah. Mm. Mm.
I don't know, man. I might have to rethink my
BioWare's biggest problem is internally. Like, it is EA knocking on the door saying, where's your microtransaction storefront? But I also think BioWare, when they're left to their own devices, have not delivered since 2010. So, like, since Mass Effect 2. And, like, there was a brilliant interview over, I think it was on The Gamer, talking to ex-BioWare devs about how much of Mass Effect 3 was made up as they went along and how it totally shows retrospectively, yeah. And that's a really interesting thing where even when they were, most of that team was still together, Casey Hudson was still there and Drew Karpyshyn and everything else, and they still couldn't get it to work. So part of me hates the fact that I think that BioWare is done, but I think that might just be the reality of it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be said about championing old studios that haven't had a hit in a while, because it's like, yes, they were good, but we should always judge people on their current output, not on the trading on their past, because you end up with horribly smug and self-entitled moments. Like, I don't know if you've seen this new or new-ish Atari thing where they put out a advert telling people that Roller Coaster Tycoon was coming back. And it was, so it starts off with this guy just going, hey, I'm Todd from Atari. You might have heard of us. And it's just kind of like, get in the bin, Todd. And then he went on like two sentences later to say, oh yeah, we're looking for this to be self-funded by you, the public. And it's like, Atari,
you are Atari. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently we should have heard of you. Apparently you should be making millions, but no, you want my money? Yeah, so I feel like you run the risk of like, if we freed up BioWare and they just ended up churning out duds, we were just like, well, that was a waste, wasn't it?
I tell you what, I've got a proposal. Do you think if Criterion were made free, but they got to keep the Burnout IP, do you think the best way to revitalize that IP is actually to make something like an arcade-based Burnout free and have microtransactions and have all that stuff, but it's free entry because it's the gameplay that's going to sell it. And most younger folk haven't even heard of Burnout.
If you did it in a freemium model where you gave maybe the car crashes, that little car crash simulator mini game, like two races for free, and then you did like 99p an extra track and whatever to add on to it, probably would be all right there.
Yeah. My shout was that I guess you would have the tracks be free and just have the different cars be the microtransactions or the skins.
Does anyone care about the different cars though? That's the thing.
No, I think that. Every microtransaction there. I remember when Gears 3 was like, you can buy a gold gun. And I was like, why would you ever pay for, oh, thousands of people have. Okay, right. Yeah, I guess we're doing that.
It was the, the neon green Nasher. And I was shocked to find that it had something like 12,000 buys. I was like,
it's just ridiculous. I've been playing a lot more Call of Duty Warzone recently because Josh will not stop mentioning it. So I was like, fine, I'll see what it's all about. It's brilliant, to be honest. I should have played a lot more of it earlier. I did play it when it came out, but I just Battle Royale bounce off it.
Yeah.
This time I had a few games in a row and it was great. Point being, I got taken out by a guy with a bright pink sniper rifle, which does sound like an innuendo, but it's not. It was only after that when I looked at it and I went, oh my God, you've spent money on that. You've actually bought a pink rifle with a little bucket of treats hanging off it for your Halloween bonus.
So what were you thinking at that point? You were like, I may have died, but I take the moral high ground here. The moral victory is mine.
Yes, I win, really. I just sort of looked at it and went, oh, Call of Duty in it. Like, oh, I forgot you had all this stuff, all this neon green pinky madness. Not to worry. Next question from Jack Asbury. With the recent casting of Ellie and Joel in The Last of Us, their question is, are video game adaptations going to be the next big trend, like how superheroes are the current trend?
Makes total sense for this to be more popular. If you look at the rise of esports and in just mainstream acceptance of video games over the last like 10, 15 years, then you have to admit it's become a less of a niche thing and more of a cultural phenomenon. We just accept that video games are now part and parcel of our existence and that they're very embedded into our society. In fact, I'm pretty sure that it was only a couple of years ago that... you could list being a Twitch streamer or an esports player as like your profession and like it was a recognized career.
Okay.
Which is a huge advancement in terms of like the integration of video games into our society. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's only a matter of time before we start seeing more adaptations for film and TV from video games.
The thing that fascinates me, like on the MCU side, is like, yeah, we've had this massive boom of superheroes. There's been tons of little spin-off and one-off things, and like Brightburn or whatever else. And obviously, the MCU closed out pretty nicely with Thanos, but then they're going to keep going. And I wonder what the momentum's going to be like for a mainstream audience. Like, are most people, quote unquote, going to be like, oh, I thought that was done. Like, Tony Stark died. I thought that was done. And then see how it goes. But in terms of like video game adaptations, like, I can't lie how much I popped watching the Mortal Kombat trailer. So it's like, but that's also because to me, it hasn't been done perfectly yet. Like, the 95 one is fine. It's schlocky. It's cheesy. There's parts of it that are actually naff, but like for the most part, it's all right. But to me, there's something to be capitalized on there that hasn't been done before. Whereas like when I look at the Borderlands movie, like that also hasn't been done well. But the meat of Borderlands is so much in its shooting that I'm like, that's such a weird pick. But I also the cast that it's attracting, it's like there must be something going on in Hollywood to be able to get the likes of Kevin Hart and what's a face from Halloween, Jimmy Lee Curtis, and everybody else in the Borderlands movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense. That whole movement is a weird thing, but I feel like we're on the cusp of a string of adaptations that'll be coming across the next few years.
Yep. I think that you're totally right. I just, it's a case of tempering those expectations, I guess, because I do feel like as with book series that have gone on for absolutely ages, video games have this amazing ability to make you care and connect about the most fantastical, over the top and downright silly things sometimes. But that obviously means that it comes with a weight of importance. Like adapting these for a casual market is always very difficult, because how do you pay reference to a source material that is actually evolving over 40 hours? Like,
well,
you know,
yeah, that's like, the thing. Like, that's the whole thing with like Last of Us. It's like, what sliver of that 20 to 30, 40 hour story do you want to tell in your 2 hour chunk or whatever? But I guess in the Last of Us case, it's a TV show. But still, are there any games that you don't want to see adapted? Because my initial shout was always Last of Us for that stuff anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I wouldn't want to see adapted. I'm not too precious about what video game franchises that I hold dear enough not to be, air quotes, ruined, because I would always look at it as the opportunity for them to be surprising. Like, everyone was very worried about The Witcher TV series.
Right.
But when that came out and astounded people, it's just like, good. It just shows that with respect to the source material, admittedly, it's a book first, then a video game, which helped him, helped measure.
Cavill definitely based his performance off Geralt. Like, he applied for the role because he adored the games. Like, that was like a whole thing.
I mean, the thing I really want to see made into a full-length movie is anything from the Warhammer 40K series. Like, I just think that it's so ripe and ready for it. Like, how can you not look at the giant clunking armor of a space marine and look at an enemy like an orc or like one of the like Eldar or something like that and just be like, that is it, the movie writes itself. You don't need to have a plot. Good guy arrives. He says that the aliens are evil. Are the aliens evil? Up to you. They're as bad as they are. They kill each other. The world gets destroyed at the end. And I've written what's the entire movie for you in about 5 seconds.
What's that crazy weapon that they've all got? Like a chainsaw gun or something?
So they've got the bolt gun, which fires. It's hilarious because when you look at a space marine, you think, oh, it's just a regular bloke, isn't he? He's just got a machine gun.
Right.
But what it actually is that he's like 7 to 8 foot tall. And it like monstrous. He's got three hearts, like tons of extra organs that power him to be like a super soldier. And the machine gun, the bolt gun that he's firing, doesn't just fire like regular ammo. It fires explosive grenade rounds as regular rounds. So when it's going like, you're firing that many explosive shots at
that's
people.
All I need. But that level of like all out carnage, you get that in video games, you get that in Saints Row and everything else, but you rarely see that tone embraced in live action with a big enough budget to do it properly.
Yeah.
Like I mean, that was one of the, I keep bringing everything back to Mortal Kombat, Jules, but the thing when Liu Kang made a big old fire dragon in the new trailer, and I was like, I didn't think they would do the dragon fatality. Like for Mortal Kombat 2.
Because it's kind of dumb.
Like, it's brilliant. But just put like the fact that they can do that now and make it work, and like for the most part, it seems like it works in the trailer, gives me hope for big, dumb video gamey madness. Like, give me the same throw movie with a shark gun if you're going to do like, you know, the insanity stuff.
I mean, Warcraft could have been a big dumb movie, but it kind of took itself too seriously.
I like that movie, Jules.
But it took itself too seriously, I think. It wasn't enough. It was too like po-faced and serious.
It was
for,
definitely
like,
really
going on.
Weirdly acted. There was a bit where a guy gets turned into a sheep and he's in a little jail cell.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
but that movie's what a mixed bag that thing is. So yeah. Like weirdly received that it cancelled the remaining second and third installments.
Yeah.
Not to worry though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. Thank everybody for all your questions sent in, Gang Gang Worldwide.
Yeah, cheers everyone.
Yes, thank you all very much. And we'll put a question out on next Thursday or whatever for more thoughts and everything else that's going on in the industry. And we'll catch you guys next week. For now, Ivan Scott Tilford joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.